Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, August 7th, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we welcome to Southern Connecticut State University political science and urban affairs professor Dr. Jonathan Warden to the show to chat about the selection of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as the vice presidential nominee for the Kamala Harris 2024 campaign, while I added a few of my own thoughts as well at the top of the program. Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor Dan Haar dropped by to chat about the controversy surrounding rising electric bills in the state. Joining us right now, one of our go-to guys or gals for politics here to tell me what I might be missing in the national scene and locally, Southern Connecticut State University political science and urban affairs professor, Dr. Jonathan Warden. John, it's Paul. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Paul, doing well. Don't worry. You're a nice guy, man. Certainly by my standards.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And, John, I have to tell my parole officer that, too. I'll tell him what you said, and we'll all be good. All right.
There you go. We all can't be morning people, after all. I'm with you on that.
You know,
that's why I teach night classes.
They let me take off my ankle monitor to come in here and do the morning show. Hey, John, are we witnessing your fall syllabus here play out live on national TV? Now, give me your macro, and then we'll go to the micro here, your macro view of now the Harris-Walz ticket here. What do you think?
Well, the thing I've been obsessed with, thank God for Twitter. I know people hate Twitter or love Twitter, but you know how much of a fiend
yeah.
I am about it.
Yeah.
I think the best thing I've seen, the mean thing out there, is if you remember, and I'm definitely dating myself, Schoolhouse Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Bill becomes law.
Yeah.
And you have Bill. And I love how they have Bill featured up there saying, I can't explain any of this.
Yes.
I'm tempted first day of class when it begins a couple weeks to put that meme up there and say, who can understand anything that's going on right now? This is beyond textbook.
Really? I mean, but it isn't. It is. I mean, I understand what you're saying, John, obviously, from you've been in the business, you've been on Capitol Hill, you're active on the local level, you teach this stuff, but... Yeah, in one case, like, it's happening, it's there, it's all falling into place, but, you know, with the secret ballots for Ms. Harris and now skipping over somebody like Josh Shapiro for Governor Walz, did they do that, John, you think, because they needed a Midwestern presence and with old lunch pail Pennsylvania Scranton Joe stepping aside? Was that more the reason you think Governor Walz is now on the ticket?
So you might remember I wrote up that op-ed a couple weeks ago about that when political parties and conventions function, they are a political enterprise. We tend to forget that. Most times, few people know all the details unless you're on the insides, the innards of the actual system and the process. And it's one thing for us to understand at maybe the state and local level. At the national level, forget it. They have their own rules.
Yeah.
They have their own processes. They have their own analyses. Everything they do is very different. And even you saw what happened with the process of this whole nomination business. You know, this has been done virtually. It's not even been done officially on the ground yet before the convention in terms of the decision-making of, you know, the candidacy for Harris or anybody for that matter, even on the ticket. So I guess for me, I shouldn't be surprised of kind of the, I don't know, I don't say back room or smoke-filled room dealings of all this, but it is kind of the nature of the beast of a political party being its own operation.
Yeah, I can imagine, John, and I'd love to have been a fly or any insect for that matter on the wall or on the floor listening to the debates, you know, Governor Walz versus Josh Shapiro versus Andy Beshear versus another guy with a great resume, Mark Kelly, former military,
right,
former astronaut. And I love, and I've worked on campaigns, I know you have too. Okay, what is it, John, right? The plus and the minus. Who do we gain? Who do we lose here with this person, right?
Right, and most times we have to consider for a national ticket, it's critical to have overlooked regions, as you're emphasizing here, the Midwest, for example, be a part of it. And that's why I thought Senator Kelly couldn't be a part of it, because, you know, Arizona is just a state that, yeah, it could be in play. I'm not denying it, but we're still back in the Southwest with Harris being at the top of the ticket with California.
Mm-hmm.
So practically, it didn't make much sense. And this whole dynamic of Shapiro versus Walz, I mean, who knows of what anybody was thinking. One thing to keep in mind, though, Paul, I'm sure you and your listeners have been thinking about it, is the timing of this.
Yeah.
The fact that this had to be decided within a couple of weeks as opposed to several months, I'm still obsessed that if this were decided by Joe Biden back in, let's say, January or February, as opposed to, let's face it, only a few weeks ago,
yeah,
it would have been a whole different situation.
Yeah, because they would have had time, right, John, to float things out there. You know, some of these leaks, quote unquote, are not really leaks. They're kind of running the flag up the pole vis-a-vis Shapiro versus Waltz versus, you know, Andy Beshear. He was getting so much early traction. And then I guess some of the Democrats said, well, wait a minute, it's a red state. That's not going to help us. But you're right. The whole compressed time frame here is just, I mean, it was wild. It was like 3 weeks. It was amazing.
Yeah, and that just doesn't happen. Again, not textbook.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the way conventions operate. And to do this during the summer, I mean, come on, this is the middle of summer. Who's paying attention? Apparently, the majority of Americans are obsessed about this conservative polls now. But then you see what's going on. Fine. Walls is thrown in there just recently, obviously, but then how many Americans really know him? I was watching, you know, NewsHour last night, and it was amazing. Well, they said over 70% of Americans don't know who Walls is. They can't formulate a decision about him yet, and he's not just a familiar household name. Well, that's the biggest problem here. So he's still a blank slate to many Americans. Even for me, I'm dumbfounded because, I mean, it's one thing when you're a congressman representing Southern, you know, Minnesota, which he did, but then quite another for him to operate as a governor. We see the different stances, and even I'm trying to keep track of all of that, and I'm even perplexed by it.
Yeah, but John, is it a detriment, or I'm wondering here as you say that, is that maybe an advantage for everybody who says, well, people probably have their baked-in feelings about Kamala Harris either way, about Donald Trump. They've kind of got their toe wet with J.D. Vance, so could it be John Wharton, some sort of an advantage here saying, hey, let me get into this. Let me Google. Let me go to his Wikipedia page, find out. So is this kind of like a built-in campaign commercial here?
It is. I mean, just to get the word out. And one thing I always bring up the example of, I love talking about this in class. talk about really, you know, a mixed marriage of sorts between somebody like Kennedy and Johnson going back to the 1960s.
Oh, my God,
talk about a ticket that just a throwback. I mean, of all people, somebody like a Johnson to join the Kennedys? I mean, that made
a
no
Catholic
political sense.
To somebody like LBJ in the deep of Texas, he's going to team up with a Roman Catholic from up there in New England? What are you, nuts?
And not to mention, it's not like, you know, Johnson himself was just a newly reformed, remember, he was a former Dixocrat, you know, who was a segregationist for years, and he flips, obviously, in the late 1950s to be on board the civil rights movements and even the laws. So in an added twist, of course, he's going to be the one who's going to, you know, seal the deal for that to happen. And obviously, the Democrats are going to lose the region mostly because of it. So it's interesting to think about that marriage, because you have the South and the North arguably united. And we can't forget how much, you know, RFK, F. Kennedy, is going to be that wedge in that you want to call it political marriage. Mm-hmm. And certainly Johnson's obsessed about that. So sometimes when we see these elections and how they play out with these tickets, and I go back to what Trump says. Yeah, the VP candidate is not the most important person in the world. I don't disagree with him on that. But many party officials are looking to the regions in terms of what this can mean in terms of a turnout. And I agree with you on Beshear. I was kind of rooting for him, just frankly, because I'm obsessed with him. I've been intrigued by him. I thought even Cooper was interesting, because North Carolina could have been in play with all those, you know, delegate counts would have been huge in North Carolina. We know that. So quite interesting to see how this plays out. At the end of the day, it's the Midwest.
Yeah. And finally, John, if you're in the strategy room with the Trump campaign now, and I know he was flailing a little and with the whole thing about the ethnicity of Kamala Harris, not so much about her racial ethnicity, but does she flip flop? Is she a chameleon? Does she say what she says to get around, to climb the ladder? But having said that, what do you think they settle on as a strategy? Are we seeing the crime thing already? Are we seeing the stolen valor thing already from J.D. Vance, who is a military veteran? Is it going to be a little bit of a buffet of all? What do you think?
Well, I think they're trying to see what can stick. I mean, because there's no real strategy. And of course, what came off at the convention there last week in front of the black journalists was just way off the cuff. Mm-hmm. It's the typical Trump. A lot of it was just, his perspective, terribly normative, but not really analytical.
Mm-hmm.
We have to recognize somebody like Harris is got, obviously, a biracial background, various experiences, more Pan-Africanist, I would argue, than Black American.
Mm-hmm.
But still, nonetheless, as has been emphasized, she did attend to Howard. She did obviously join, the historically Black, Greek, sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha. So there's a lot of complexities there. But obviously, a lot of this is being over-politicized and blown up. And so it'll be interesting to see what can work, if it, anything can work at this point, of what the press is calling the Harris honeymoon period right now.
So what do we have, 2 weeks left till the students come back? Is that what you got, two more weeks?
About the same. Well, I was about to say it'll be a couple weeks about the same time as the Democratic convention. So
wow.
It's great timing.
There you go. Your syllabus is on TV 24/7, John. That's all you got to do. Just tell them to watch this, right?
Scariest thing is that I have to amend it and change it as we go along now.
That's right. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Southern Connecticut State University. John, always good to chat. I'm sure we'll chat in a few weeks. Thank you, sir.
Great, Paul. Thank you.
All right. There you go. So let's play a little game here to start off the program at about a quarter after two on this midweek Wednesday. A lot coming up. Dr. John Wharton later on of the show to talk about the selection of the governor of Minnesota to the Harris ticket, Dan Haar, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Your calls twixt now and then. But let's play a little game, shall we? And it's always my favorite thing in the world, or one of my favorite things in the world, to play Can You Imagine If? And this is how we play that game. We pick things out of the news that are usually said by politicians or media people. And usually, if those politicians or media people are of one political, you know, stripe versus the other, a lot of people will know it's not a real good thing that they said, but they don't have the testicular fortitude, shall I say, or the balls, sorry, ladies, but you know what I'm talking about, to actually point this out. Because if one party says that there's 3 days days of outrage in the online sphere, in the opinion sphere, in the Twitter slash X sphere, and on CNN and on MSNBC, and that's usually if it's said by somebody who's a mild or moderate conservative. But if ugly things are said by Democrats, and the favorite party of the media, don't say anything. Don't say anything. Now, you may say, Paul, what are you talking about? Well, continuing our theme of the past 3 days about the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, I give you an, oh, you don't like that? Well, do me a favor. Before you get all upset and call me, and you can, at 203-333-9422, you folks out there who are not Trump fans, and God bless you, there's probably half to two-thirds in this area. That's not the issue. But you folks out there who say, well, I like the Democratic Party. I want them to win. Fine. I'm all for Kamala Harris and Governor Walz. Okay, fine. Are you also for the bubbling and now pretty evident anti-Semitism in your party? Are you talking about this again? Yes, I am. Because I ain't going to drop it. Because we are hearing things in the media now, not on the dark web and not on some neo-Nazi site and not on some, you know, weird kind of Alex Jones kind of thing. No, we're hearing these things from analysts and commentators and talking heads and strategists from the Democratic Party still opening their mouths and inserting their foot or feet, as it were, maybe they can get them both in there, as to why Tim Walz was picked in a state that, well, the Democrats should have locked up versus picking Josh Shapiro. Now, over the past couple of days, the Democrats have continued to try and do damage control on this. Well, he pulled himself out at the last moment. He didn't think it would be a right fit. Oh, well, see, that's not because of anti-Semitism. Oh, it isn't? Well, if he didn't think it would be a right fit, why didn't he tell the Harris people right at the outset, she don't consider me? But all of a sudden, when in a past few days you have fellow members of Congress saying, hey, we have a big anti-Semitism, Jew-hating problem in the Democratic Party, all of a sudden Josh Shapiro said, well, you know, maybe I don't want this. And good for him if that's what he said. Because, listen, the guy is obviously not dumb. You hear him speak. He's a brilliant guy. You know, governor elected and handily of a major state. But I want you to hear this. And this runs for about 90 seconds, but give it time here because it flies by. And you people who are maybe not card-carrying Democrats but proud liberals, I want you to call me or email me if you don't want to come on the air. Maybe you agree with me. You don't want your voice heard, though I get it. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And you know what? All the top Democrats in Connecticut, Ned Lamont, Susan Bisewitz, Dick Blumenthal, Chris Murphy, all five members of the House. Oh, they love this pick. Oh, Tim Walz, what a great pick. Well, I give you now a 90-second chunk from, again, not some, you know, conspiracy program from the KKK, CNN, Jake Tapper, and a couple of Democratic strategists. Now, I give credit to Jake Tapper because at the end, Jake Tapper kind of speaks up and he's a little incredulous at what he's hearing from these strategists. And God bless Jake Tapper. I've always kind of liked him. I know a lot of conservatives don't, but Tapper, just like Chuck Todd, is somebody who calls out BS, you know, when he sees it most of the time. And listen to Tapper toward the end of this, and he steps in, he goes, yeah, but the issue is he's Jewish. And then listen to the, and this is from the Democratic Party. And again, as the start of this little exercise, what if, can you imagine if this was said by Republicans? Listen to what I'm about to play you. And instead of it being Jake Tapper and on CNN with Democratic strategists, ask yourself, hey, self, what would the reaction to this be if it was on Fox or Newsmax with, say, I don't know, Bret Baier and some of the people they have on The Five or on Gutfeld? Oh, my God. There would be boycott calls, but because it's CNN, it's just fine.
And I think ultimately, Shapiro, I think fit is important, but, you know, I also think that when you look at the principle of do no harm, maybe they did say, in a state like Minnesota, do we want to, those 100,000 uncommitted voters who came out about the Gaza war, do we want to antagonize those voters? Those are all part of the questions as well.
So, but can I just say,
Tim Walz also spoke conciliatorily towards those people. He said, look, that uncommitted vote is significant and those people should be heard. So having that kind of response, I think, is probably more of an open door to the parts of the party that have been very frustrated with the Democrats.
So, but just to one point on the Gaza war, Shapiro has the same position on Israel that Governor Walz, that Senator Kelly has. He's actually been more critical of Netanyahu than the other two, but he is Jewish.
And he's also the face of the crackdown on the protests, right? He spoke very vehemently about those campus protests as being anti-Semitic.
Not all of them. The ones that were anti-Semitic, he criticized as being anti-Semitic.
He was out front on the issue. So I'm wondering if that's the kind of thing that, again, for the activist wing of the party,
sure, absolutely,
they felt was a slap in the face.
Yeah.
Dear God, did you hear that? Now, a lot of time, now understand something. There's a difference, okay? You understand what I'm saying here? There's a difference between saying, hey, we're going to pick this candidate or that candidate because they're a man or a woman or even an ethnic strain or race, African-American, Hispanic candidate. That's called ticket balancing. That's been happening for 100 years here. But how about, I forgot what her name is. I got to get you her name because you should know who it is. Well, we didn't want to pick Shapiro because it would have antagonized people. Did you hear that? Well, you know, and the verbal twister here was wonderful. And God bless Jake Tapper. He came in here and said, yeah, and he's Jewish. And then, of course, they jumped at, he was big in shutting down those protests that he thought were anti-Semitic. And here comes Jake Tapper again going, well, a lot of them were anti-Semitic. Can you imagine? And nothing is said. Nothing is said. My Jewish friends out there, does this make you mad? Because it should. Because I know 70% of Jews vote Democratic. The other 30% tend to be Orthodox, and they either don't vote or they vote Republican, whatever. But my God, can you imagine if this was a Republican? Can you imagine if this was on Newsmax or One America on Fox? Well, you know, he is a Jew, but it's on CNN and it's Democratic staffers and openly saying, well, if we pick Shapiro, it's going to antagonize certain voters? Really? And, you know, those voters in Minnesota, wink, wink, Somali Muslims. Those voters in Michigan, wink, wink, Arab Americans, Muslims. My God, you Democrats out there, what is happening to your party? What is happening to your party? Dear God, you have a governor who let one of his major cities burn. You've got a nominee who still hasn't held a news conference now, going on 18 days. I think we know why. And you've got a party, you've got a party saying, well, the guy is Jewish. And it's the Republicans who are the problem? Really? The quarter past five every midweek Wednesday. Dan Har, Hearst, Connecticut media, senior editor and columnist.
Sure, you can say Meteor.
Meteor, yes. Or as the Kennedys used to say, Cuber. I could say.
Yeah, Cuber. Right. Either does the Huler in Cuber.
Cuber. Dan, how are you? How you been, Dan? How you been?
I'm okay. I'm hopeful that I don't have whatever condition that's advertised on your show there. These drug companies are advertising things nobody ever heard of. It's like, oh, my God, I got that pain. Oh, that must be me.
Well, I learned about that because my ex-wife, my son's mom, works for a pharmaceutical company. And the last woman I dated seriously was also a pharmaceutical person. So, listen, what can I tell you? I know from whence I speak.
There's two ways to look at it. Yeah. One is the marketing is out of control, and the other is it's great for us in the media
because
it's good for it pays for the flow of information in society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of information, boy, Dan, I got a couple of calls today. I got calls when this happened, you know, about these electric bills coming up with the public utility, the public assistance charge going crazy on some bills. The Republicans, I don't know whether you saw, they're going to have a big news conference about it. You've got Matt Ritter pointing fingers at Ryan Fazio. So what are your thoughts on all this?
How long do you have? the bottom line here is that in electric rates, there are lots of moving parts.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them is simply usage, right? And overwhelmingly, what we're seeing right now is not a rate increase at all.
Exactly.
But simply an expected decline in rates that didn't happen because of a quirk we can talk about in a second, combined with huge usage increase because, for example, my July of 2024 bill, this mm-hmm. current bill, mm-hmm. was 20%, 330, yeah. It was about 20-25% more electric usage than my July mm-hmm. of 2023, mm-hmm. let alone my May-June bill because the weather hit late June, of course. And so what we had was a huge heat wave at the end of June. And I didn't even get the full brunt of it because I was away in the end of June.
Yeah.
And so a big part of what we are looking at right now is a heat wave hit exactly as the July bills came when you would normally see the summertime generation rate decrease, right?
Yeah.
Another big thing is this Millstone contract.
Yeah.
And I can explain it. You tell me how long you want me to explain it for, and I'll explain
it between 15 seconds and 3 hours. Well, do I understand that Millstone power is generally expensive? That's what I've been told or not?
No, that's not a correct statement. Mm-hmm. Millstone power is cheap.
Yeah.
And because Millstone power was so cheap, Millstone wasn't making enough money to satisfy its owner, Dominion Energy. And so they went hat in hand to the state in 2019 and said, if you don't give us more money because the free market isn't helping us because the free market isn't good. 15 years ago, when they were printing money because the free market was making it possible for them to print money, Dick Blumenthal, then the attorney general, this is more 20 years ago, went and said, let's tax them on their windfall earnings. And they said, don't mess with the free market.
Yeah.
Cut to 2019, the free market. And so they hoodwinked moderates in the House and the Senate. The liberals and the conservatives didn't like this. But the moderates, all including the governor, said, yes, we have to basically pay this green mail to Millstone in order to make them stay. And so that is the bill that's coming due, is the surcharge that we're paying. It's more complicated than that. I'm oversimplifying.
Sorry.
It's not a surcharge that we're paying Millstone. It's a flat rate. But when the flat rate exceeds the rates in the market, we owe money. That's the money we owe. And then, so there are lots of moving parts in this. None of them have to do, not one single one has to do with Eversource and UI profits.
Well, that's true.
Not a single one.
Exactly. And they've got to make money. They're publicly held companies. I get that. I understand that. There's a lot of finger pointing, Dan Haar, over the, you know, this public benefits number. And some people I've had, granted on the Republican side on the show, have said, hey, that fee, it's not that we shouldn't pay it, but it should not be in the bills. You know, some people are saying, let's get it out of there so it can be fully and you know, fully and properly debated here. What are your thoughts on that? Because a lot of people are calling me saying, hey, I don't get this. Why did this go up like crazy?
Well, what that is, there are two big parts of the public benefit charge that are in play. One is the Millstone flat rate that we pay. And if the flat rate exceeds the contract rate that everybody else is getting, we have to pay the difference. And that's this cost. That accounts for about 2/3 of it. One is the policy where we weren't allowed to shut off anybody's electricity. That accounts for about $160 million, or about 1/3 of the total bill that we have. Come a little more than, less than a third, about 1/4 of the total bill, or maybe 20%. Now that I think of it, it's a piece of it, but it's not a big piece. And so you have to look at each thing separately. Let's look first at the Millstone piece.
Yeah.
What precisely are these critics saying? Are they saying the taxpayers should bail out the ratepayers? Because I would object to that as a taxpayer.
Okay.
Right. I'd rather pay it in my rates than pay it in my taxes. Right. I don't think the taxpayers should bail out the ratepayers. Are they? I think what they're saying is code for that. And I would object to that. And I don't think that's equitable. I think people who use electricity should pay for the electricity, not all of us as taxpayers. And it's the same thing with the rate shut off. You know, a lot of people didn't pay their bills just because they didn't have to. Right. So why should the taxpayers bail out the ratepayers?
You know, every year or so, Dan Haar, when this pops up, you know, the usual suspects say the usual things. And, you know, we get this kind of bipartisan. Yeah, it's really expensive here. We can't understand why this power costs so much in Connecticut. Is there anything, and I know we could go for 3 hours on this, is there anything that can be done about this? Or is this just kind of a grin and bear it sort of thing? I mean, what's the answer, if there is any?
Well, the short answer is there's no silver bullet. The other piece of the short answer is that a big part of the problem is speculation in generation prices. Not the core distribution and transmission charges that UI and CL&T get are not wildly out of line. The generation charges are high because in the Northeast there's a lot of speculation, and I don't know why that is.
Mm-hmm.
The other little piece of it here, not little, the other piece of it is this Millstone bailout, which cost Connecticut ratepayers about $600 million,
okay,
right? And I'm not going to stop calling it a bailout. They
no,
keep
go
saying,
ahead.
Oh, it's not a bailout. Right? This Millstone bailout that cost Connecticut ratepayers about $680 million, right? we're bailing out. We're subsidizing Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine.
Excellent.
They're all getting the benefit of being a part of the nuclear power grid, right? Millstone electrons go just to them as well as to us.
Yeah.
Right? Why is only Connecticut? Because Connecticut blinked, because it's such a big part of the Connecticut economy, because they work here and we didn't want it shut down. But so if Connecticut hadn't blinked and gone for that contract in 2019, right? And as with, you know, Babe Ruth's last home run, 8 million people claim they vote against it, right? You can't find anybody now who voted for it, right? Only the governor is stepping up and saying, yes, this was good policy.
Yeah.
But I believe that the grid operator called ISO New England would have been forced to step up and cause that subsidy to happen New England-wide. And so that's one thing that wouldn't have been, that shouldn't have come out of our hides. Another is, frankly, Connecticut is a rich state and people use a darn lot of electricity. And it, even though you're paying for the usage, the fact that we need such enormous baseload to air condition all those 12,000 square foot houses and to heat and cool the pools down there where you are, not up here in Hartford.
Wait a minute. You don't have a 12,000 square foot abode? Come on, Dan.
I don't, and I have one little air conditioner in my bedroom. In any case, yeah. I do have a big house, but I don't use that much electricity. The point is that all kidding aside, the base load that we have to maintain costs more money per unit of electricity than it would if we had a lower base load, right? So my opinion, frankly, is over 800 kilowatt hours, or let's say 1,000 now because of inflation, over 1,000 kilowatt hours per month. You ought to pay double for that.
Wow.
Just charge people. If you're using more than 1,000, you're paying double.
That'd be like
For every kilowatt hour over 1,000.
Be like my Italian mother and father. Turn the light off. What? This is crazy. Turn it off. Come on. Finally, Dan, interesting story here. There are a couple of out-of-state Senate races that have kind of a weird angle for Connecticut here. What's that about?
Oh, yeah. These are... there's a fellow named McCormick in Pennsylvania, who's running for U.S. Senate, and he was the CEO of Bridgewater Associates.
Okay,
and there's another woman. What's her name? She was the daughter of the former governor of New Mexico.
Yeah.
She was the chief financial officer of Bridgewater Associates. So they have these big, huge mansions in Connecticut, and they're running for Senate in their respective states, which is where they're from. Nella Domenici, she's the daughter of Pete Domenici,
governor. Yeah.
And so they're running, and they did grow up in their respective states, Pennsylvania and New Mexico, but they made their money, and they still have houses in, or maybe in one case they don't still have a house, but they had houses in Connecticut.
About that, huh?
And so their Democratic opponents are saying these are Republican carpetbaggers coming into our state. And I don't know enough about it to draw a distinction. A lot depends on how much time these people spent in those states. You know, did they go to high school there and leave and never come back? You know, they're saying, well, they always return to their states. Do they always return to their states in their hearts? You know, I don't know.
Dan, I haven't checked the AP style book in years. Is there an accepted definition of carpetbagging as far as the AP goes or not? Do we know that or not?
I think that you can say Hillary Clinton in New York and Robert F. Kennedy in New York circa 1966.
Yes.
I think those are safe to call carpetbaggers. They never lived in those states prior. But if someone, frankly, yes, to give a serious answer to your question, these are people who are from and have generations of history in those states. So I would less be inclined to call them carpetbaggers. But if people want to say they're rich Connecticut hedge fund coming, then that's a legitimate criticism.
There you go. All right. Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor. Dan, always good to chat with you. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll chat next week. Thank you.
Next week, we're going to go over all the primaries.
Yes, with all the people getting out to vote. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, buddy. Thank you. There you go.